today. We are the team of conversational AI and conversation design experts here at Master of Code here in North America. At Master of Code, we help organizations to design, build, and launch amazing conversational chat and voice experiences. My name is Andrei Burlutsky. I'm head of marketing here at Master of Code, and I will be the host for today's event. So what are our streams are about? Every week on our LinkedIn page, we share with you short analytics, short insights, and top of mind of CXO from different industries and different areas. Every week, we launch a poll to ask you to vote for the most crucial, from your point of view, top of mind business challenges or trends in particular subject area. And every Monday or Wednesdays, we go live with Master of Code experts to discuss how to tackle top-of-mind challenges or how to understand and explain and explore the different type of trends in conversational AI area. We are live today on LinkedIn, on Facebook, and YouTube. So please select any channel you'd like to join and participate our discussion today. Welcome to ask any questions or share your thoughts in the comments to our stream. Doesn't matter where you are, on LinkedIn, on Facebook, or YouTube, just please put your questions, comments, thoughts into the comments field, and we will roll out to our experts to discuss and ask. Today, we explore conversation design, and I'm happy to introduce our experts today. Please welcome Amanda Stevens, Director of Conversation Design here at Master of Code. Hello, Amanda.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And our next guest, John Mowat, Manager Conversational Solutions here at Master of Code. Hello,
hey,
John.
Everybody. Hey, Andre, thanks for having me.
Hello, guys. Thank you very much for spending time with us today. Very much appreciated. And in order to actually start with why we got together, I want to share with you what we've got as a result after we launched our survey on our LinkedIn page, talking about what are the areas in conversation design audience things are the most important in this area. So let me start in showing what we've got as a result. So the 17% of the audience voted for the rise of the voice. And I think this topic is very much discussed in different communities, from marketing and hardware manufacturers, from AI developers and conversation designers. Then next one, again, 17%, we've got for anticipating bias. I think this topic is not a new one. It's under discussion already for several years. And it appeared when we started talking about artificial intelligence itself. And I think this topic is very interesting, can be explored through conversation design area. One more thing is error handling, and I'm as a consumer, I'm somehow surprised that this point got just 0 points from our audience. And the last, but I think the most exciting and interesting one, 67% went to how to grow human side of UX with conversation design. So, guys, in order to kick off our discussion, our conversation, can you give your reflection on those results based on your experience and projects you are engaged? What do you see, feel when you see on those areas? So yeah, please start with Amanda, yeah, please.
Yeah, sure. I mean, not surprised, you know, the rise of voice. I mean, we've been talking about the rise of voice for the last few years, and every year there's just a further expansion on what voice can do, the complex use cases it can handle. And of course, folks, I'm not surprised folks want to learn more about it. Same thing with anticipating bias. This has become certainly a growing, really important topic that people are really investing more time and resources to. You know, I think when conversational AI kind of really started to grow in 2018. We were all just figuring out like how to build bots, how to design bots, how to launch them. But now we're getting more granular. We're really looking, especially as a designer, we're really looking into how does the language, how does the tone, how does the content affect other groups or the users that it's servicing? Are there, you know, we all have inherent biases, and we have to be really critical about what we design and who we put it in front of to make sure that, you know, we are providing accessibility and we're providing, you know, user-centric design for and experiences for everyone. In terms of error handling, I think maybe folks, you know, aren't as interested because when conversational AI really, again, came out in 2018, I think there was such a big focus on if the bot doesn't know what to do, pass it off to a human. So, you know, perhaps people out there are a little bit more comfortable in how to handle.
Cool. Thank you, Amanda. John, you are working day to day with the customers, with partners inside the project. What will be your reflection on the results?
Yeah, just building on some of the things Amanda mentioned there, I think the way I'm interpreting that 0% for error handling is that people might have put that in under the category of growing the human side, because a lot of times when we go in and we analyze transcripts of conversations, we see that when the user starts to ask the questions like, are you a human? Or can I talk to a human? That's after they've hit a wall. When they tried to do something, it didn't succeed. That's when it starts to become obvious for a lot of people that they're working with a system now and not a human. And that's when they start to feel like, where is the human side of this design? It's because mm-hmm. now I can tell it's a computer. So I think those two are very closely related. And certainly when you're in working with a system, if you're on a team designing one of these, maintaining one of these conversational AIs, error handling is a daily focus because with 100,000 users, with 500,000 users out there hammering on the system every day, some of them are going to find new paths through the system, ask new questions, throw new patterns that we've just never seen before. And so it's all about gracefully handling that, trying to build a system that can do that and recover and maybe steer them back to the path we wanted them to follow. And when we have to escalate them over to a human agent who can maybe understand what's going on there. So definitely on a daily basis, handling errors is always in focus for the teams. But as I said, you know, I think that really relates to the human side of design and something yes. that we're always getting more sophisticated at. And I know one of the things we're going to talk about in a little bit is, you know, what do we look for in conversational designers? What helps make somebody good at that role? And that empathy and that being able to build a human feeling system is a huge, huge factor for us.
John, thank you for bridging errors handling and grow human side of UX. As marketer, I look at this area as a, you know, an additional touch point in the customer journey. I mean, what I'm saying, meaning additional touch, like if we're talking about, for example, omni-channel marketing, for example, with the rise of voice, we are getting additional touch point, how we can engage our customer to talk with our brand, the additional channel, the type of communication, etc. And I know that most of the people, they do think and expect that software or artificial intelligence, for example, can work without mistakes. Like human, it's allowed for the human to make a mistake. The system mm-hmm. cannot do it. And it's not right, actually. There are a lot of things like bias topic, which can happen actually all the time when we are talking about conversation AI, conversation design. And in this particular case, we really need to focus how to make this interaction between human and machine more human, if mm-hmm. I can say it this way.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I think Amanda and I have seen on a number of projects is when the system is first rolling out, we see a lot of copy where the bot is saying something like, oh, I'm still learning. Can you try saying that a different way? Or I'm still getting up to speed and my programmers haven't taught me to say that yet. And you can understand why designers put that in. But when you put yourself in the human user's shoes, that's not a comforting and secure thing to hear. That doesn't build the trust in that interaction. And so we usually start iterating on those messages pretty early in the project and try to come up with more graceful ways to recognize that we're off on a path we didn't anticipate and handle it.
Cool. Thanks for mentioning designers. Amanda, I have a question to you as a director of conversation design and master of code. What is the difference between chatbot and voice bots when we talk about conversation design?
Sure. You know, there are a lot of similarities. So before I jump into the differences, you know, it's still so important for both voice and chat channels that we want to be empathetic, we want to have nuance, we want to be conversational. But, you know, there's little details that we want to make sure are really, we changed when we're going from chat to voice. For example, just channel specific words. If you look at a chatbot, you may see tap here or view or click. We don't want that in voice, right? It doesn't make sense to view because you're not viewing anything unless it's multimodal. So we want to make sure we see words like see and view in chat and use words like hear and talk or listen in voice channels. So that's one piece. It's also really important to have shorter dialogues in voice. Mm-hmm. If you are looking at, you know, engaging with a chatbot, it's so easy to consume, you know, maybe three sentences, one to three sentences in a content block. We could also scroll up, right? If there's multiple blocks coming at us of content from a chatbot, we can scroll up and kind of double check. You won't have that in voice. So dialogue should be shorter, sharper, more succinct, mm-hmm. so users can easily, you know, consume and kind of continue forward without asking for repetition. Also, you know, just with technology today, there can be longer delays in voice experiences when processing information, connecting to APIs. So we want to make sure we kind of set that expectation for the user by having phrases such as, one moment, let me look into this for you. I know when I talk to Siri and she needs to think a little bit longer, she'll always add, you know, hold on, one moment, right? Kind of prepping me for a little bit of a wait, where chatbots, again, might be a little bit faster in getting that next information to you. So yeah, those are kind of the main differences that jump out to me.
Cool. I think it's the first rule of a content writers to be short. I mean, don't try to write longer dialogues. Absolutely. Or text, etc. The shorter you are, the more straightforward you go to the goal you would like to achieve.
Definitely. And that's even more important in voice. I mean, we should always be succinct. No one wants to read paragraphs and paragraphs, but it's definitely more important to be more succinct in voice experiences.
Yeah, that was the part that you mentioned, Amanda, that I was that really registers for me as a user, not just as a designer. You know, as I've kind of introduced Alexa here in the home, and I've got kids, and then I've got friends who have it in their home as well. When you ask something that you've asked 100 times before, but it doesn't understand you this time, and it starts going into the, I'm sorry, I don't know how to help with that, or whatever, you know in the first half second that it hasn't understood, but it still keeps saying all this text or all this verbiage. And whereas in a chatbot, in a text-based bot, at least it's just blatted on screen all at once, and you can, you know, okay, it didn't understand and you can move on. So everybody gets more and more agitated and frustrated cutting it off, like, okay, stop, computer, stop, Alexa, you know. And I find that, like you were saying, Amanda, that keeping things shorter, and Andre, like you mentioned, being succinct is so important in voice, because the users get agitated very quickly when they're talking to something that feels so human and it doesn't act like a human.
Sure.
John, your story with Alexa reminded me, do you remember this story when I think it's Burger King for OK Google sentence, all the smartphones or tablets were opening the website. When you say OK Google, the Burger King website was opening. Do you remember the story? It was like a few years ago.
Yeah, I remember hearing about it. And also, we start to see that in other, like in movies and TV shows, where they'll put in the comments like that to try to trigger people's devices that right there in the living room. So what a fascinating and unforeseen consequence of the design there.
Absolutely. John, this is the... this is the fun story, great that we have, like, not only serious but fun examples. But what do you think are the most sensitive aspects that needs to be considered by conversation designer to avoid key bias issues?
Yeah, and like you guys mentioned earlier, I think that's something that's getting more and more focus now, and which is great because bias is an invisible enemy that can infect a design in any domain, not just in conversational AI, but certainly it's something we want to be mindful of. And so it can manifest at a couple different levels. So something as early in a project as how you gather feedback from your stakeholders. If you say something like, in wording a question to the stakeholders on a project, should we use this emoji or that emoji? You've already implied that you should have emojis in the project, and maybe that's not the right tone or presentation for that brand. But the stakeholders are relying on the designers to be the experts in understanding their brand. It moves into how you design the interactions that the user has with the bot. If you start off working with a brand and first delivering on their website channel, you might rely on them having a mouse and that they can hover the mouse on certain controls to get more information. And then when it comes time to do phase two of the project and port all that over onto a mobile device, all of a sudden you've lost the hover interaction. And so those are kind of very like low level design choices where bias can manifest. But I think what the poll was getting at, and I think what is the much more important social concern is bias in things like accessibility or cultural differences, sexism and racism, and how do those creep into design and into the end result that we deliver. And one of the places that can really emerge is in the process of identifying the user personas. So early in a project, we're going to work with the brand, work with marketing, work with people that are interacting with the end users frequently, and try to build out an understanding of the different segments or demographics that we're interacting with. And so one of the helpful tools there is to come up with a model representative of that segment. And so if you have a segment in your user base, like people with an IT background, and now you take my picture and you use that as a light-skinned male with glasses, if that's your representative of somebody with an IT background, now you've put a bias into that project, because now everybody else that looks at the documentation that you're sharing amongst the team and trying to say, okay, this is a representative of one of our segments, they're bringing all of their own cultural assumptions into when they see what I look like. And that can have huge impacts on all of the design choices that are made. So one of the ways that you can address that exact, like specific example is don't ever use real people as your characters for a user persona. Come up with cartoon characters or have somebody commission artwork for it or something like this, or at least have a variety of pictures that go along with it, because pictures are a helpful thing, of course, and we are trying to build a representative example of an entire range of people. So that's always a challenge. There's always going to be the opportunity for bias to creep in that kind of an exercise. So I think one of the most important things is just bringing awareness to that, which conversations like this one and all of the literature that's being generated helps with. Focus groups can identify that during design. If you run early designs and early dialogue copy past focus groups and ask them to flag things that made them feel uncomfortable or made them confused or hurt their feelings or anything like this, it can really help to identify those things. And then, of course, after launch, it's all about reviewing transcripts, reviewing conversational activity, and identifying the places where CSAT, customer satisfaction, has dropped off and trying to trace it back to some of those biases that we might have introduced.
Wow, that's super interesting, John. And as I understand, so in AI space, we really need to, to use different tools like explainable AI to understand how software or AI made a decision talking to this or that person. In the conversation design space, everything depends on conversation designer, on his skills, competencies, right? And how he asks the question, prepares persona, etc. Am I right?
Explainable AI is a fascinating topic as well, and I'm nowhere near an expert in it, but it's something I like to read about for sure. And you're right. It's just to finish your example there. Suppose all of the knowledge of why we made a choice in a design is in one designer's head, and then that person leaves the team, leaves the company, or whatever. You've lost all of that context and all of that information about why we chose to do things in a certain way. So, you know, one of the things that Amanda and I have when we run training courses for clients before is walk them through our, you know, we have a template with a bunch of questions built into it for building out these personas for both the user groups, for the bot itself, and then turning all of this stuff into artifacts that can persist even if individuals on the team leave and you lose that person who can explain the choices that we had in the design.
Cool. John, as soon as we have mentioned several times already conversation designers, can you give some insights on core conversation designer competencies? Looking at our poll, like considering rise of voice and conversation design in voice interactions, or bias topic, or human side of UX. So what are the core conversation designer competencies now?
Yeah, and I've actually learned a lot of this stuff from Amanda. She was part of the team that brought me into Master of Code and then helped me kind of onboard into this whole domain, because my background was more in traditional software development for interest's sake, I enjoy writing and creative writing and things like that. But definitely one of the things that we've looked for then in new people joining the team and that we've advised clients on what to look for. At the end of the day, it all comes down to a human-centric, empathetic design, the ability to put yourself in users' shoes, craft a system that is going to account for all of the different backgrounds of all of the different users. Different people on our team have different skills that they're bringing and experiences in those areas. So, for example, user experience designers. Amanda's got a big focus in advertising, just like you probably do, Andre, marketing. An English teacher who speaks five languages, a linguistics expert. For me, it's more probably game design, which is one of my hobbies, writing as a hobby. And then, like I said, more of a traditional software development background. But you get all these different skills that we're bringing into the team to help create a human-centric, empathetic experience. And that's really kind of one of the most important things that we look for. It doesn't really matter what the person's background is if they can show that they can help contribute there. Amanda, you've probably done a lot more of that, of reviewing that with people than I have. So anything more to add?
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And what I love so much about this industry and this style of work, like this role, is it really lends itself well. We're having amazing conversation designers with so many different diverse backgrounds. And I always promote folks who are building other conversation design teams, have a really diverse set of people. As John mentioned, we, you know, background in game design, we have linguists, we have teachers, we have folks with, like me, with advertising backgrounds. I've spoken with people who were in the movie industry that did script writing. I've chatted with people who have done, you know, audio mixing and video, where, again, it's kind of taking all different clips and pieces and putting it into kind of an elegant output, which is video. So they're all like very much transferable skills. And again, once you kind of teach them the foundations of really good conversation design, I've been so impressed by folks, what they've been able to do with so many different backgrounds. So absolutely promote a diverse team to, just like anything, diversity is always amazing. But yeah, if anyone listening wants to be a conversation designer, there's, you know, really dig down and think about, you know, your experience when it comes to writing, user experience, human interactions, client-facing experience. Those are really great foundations to start with, and you can build from there.
And I just have one other thought on that, Amanda. One of the things that I guess I found I benefited from is, like, some of my own background was more in BA work, business analysis work, and depending on the project team that you end up with, sometimes the conversational designer needs to have more of that soft skill focus. Some projects, it's going to be handy if you've actually, if you can read code, if you can speak the language the developers are speaking, because different projects have different requirements, and so there's some times where I have to go in and read you know, JSON messages and understand API documentation. And so if anybody out there is listening and has the technical background but is interested in something more conversational, something more human-oriented, don't count yourself out either, because those skills help too.
Absolutely.
Guys, I'm so much enjoy our conversation. Amanda, John several times mentioned you and human side of conversation design. So you a few months ago, you've been talking about tips and tricks how to make a chatbot more human-like. Let's say after 6 months as of today, what's new in this direction? How it has evolved? Maybe something new came to your mind from the projects you experience now.
Sure. I mean, a lot of those best practices around, you know, being transparent, like letting people know that they're speaking with a bot or virtual assistant, the bot admitting mistakes when it doesn't understand, being empathetic, you know, ensuring that you have multiple ways to get to the same place. Those all still ring true. Where we're seeing more advances about really creating that human-like experience is the ability for the bot to carry on context. So to have a full conversation without reiterating context. So if you say to the bot, I want to go to Mexico, and then they say, here are some flights available. And then I say, what's the weather? It'll know I'm talking about Mexico. I won't have to say, what is the weather in Mexico? So I'm so excited. I mean, I've been waiting for this for a while. And, you know, just again, with advances in technologies and NLU systems and bot platforms, we have the ability to create these really fully contextual experiences, which just makes it a lot more natural. Because when you and I are speaking, we have context. We're not constantly repeating ourselves of what we're talking about. So excited to see more of those bots in production, people engaging with them, and just, again, having that more natural flow of conversations with a virtual assistant and a human.
Cool. Thanks, Amanda. Guys, from what I've heard, you know, we just like, in 30 minutes, we just, you know, scratched the card, just looking from the very high level, what conversation design is right now and what are important areas inside it, which have been served during the poll on our LinkedIn page. I would like you to thank you very much for being so open and explaining with great examples what is what. We will continue exploring this particular topic even more on our digital channels, and I'm happy to invite everyone who've been with us today to join next week, our next discussion in conversational AI space. John, Amanda, I so much appreciate your time. Thank you for being with us today. Have a great day. And for those who've been with us today, have a great day too. And hear you soon. Bye-bye.